An invited talk, 20 minutes by Herb Fry of NASA Goddard Space Flight Center, entitled Previously Unknown Large Impact Basins on the Moon Revealed by Lunar Topographic Data.
Thank you. I'd like to thank Dave and Bill for the opportunity to come and share this with you. MOLA helped us find evidence for a large number of impact basins on Mars that were not previously known from studies of image data. This is shady relief MOLA data. This is stretched MOLA topographic data. And these circular features in here are things that I call quasi-circular depressions. Some of these are very obvious impact craters that show up on images, like the Cassini impact basin right here, which clearly shows up on an image. Some of these are depressions, features in the topographic data that do not show up on images at all. Given that there's a large population of these sorts of things on Mars, the obvious question then becomes, if there is such a large population of these things on Mars, which we did not recognize before we had MOLA topography, is there perhaps also a population of unrecognized impact basins on the Moon that might be revealed by topography? LRO and or Chandrayaan data will certainly be able to answer this question, but until we get that new data, there is in fact a high-quality gridded topographic data set available, and it's the Unified Lunar Control Net, the reference for which is down here, which I believe should be able to reveal at least the largest basins, those maybe bigger than 100 kilometers in diameter, given the quoted resolution of this data. Now, other people have pointed out that basins not previously recognized can be seen in lunar topographic data based on early Clementine data. Spoutis et al. And Zuber et al. Drew attention to a couple of new basins. And more recently, Spoutis and co-workers have also looked at this data set, the ULCN data, and found lots of new basins, especially on the far side. That's a private communication. So what we have done, So what we have done is to search the ULCN data the same way we studied the MOLA data, using a program called GridView, which is an interactive IDL-based graphics program that allows us to stretch the topographic data, contour it, profile through it, and so on like that. And what we have done is to apply that to the lunar data to map all of what we call quasi-circular depressions in that data that are larger than 300 kilometers in diameter. Then we've compared those with those topographically derived basins with previous photogeologically mapped basins of the same size range as listed by Wilhelms. This just shows progressive stretches of the ULCN data as you go across here, and as you can see, features start to pop out as you stretch the data that may not have been obvious in, say, an original stretch. You can contour these that bring out the detail and more clearly, especially the circular nature of these features. And then in this particular frame, what I've done is to plot the known large basins bigger than 300 kilometers in diameter. The ones that are shown in solid circles are from Wilhelm's list, basically. The dashed ones are new features that show up, like this one south of Grimaldi. This is Grimaldi. This is a feature which shows up in the topography, which is not on Wilhelm's list. Here's a profile that actually goes through this, and you see they both have very similar sorts of structure. Why this is an unnamed feature, I really don't know. Okay, so the bottom line, the first bottom line result that came out of this study is that the topography does confirm the centers and diameters of many of the basins listed by Wilhelms, but 10 on his list have centers and or diameters that differ from those suggested by the topography, and 10 on his list are not obvious topographic basins at all. The biggest offender in this regard, in my view, is Tranquillitatis, which is a large, roughly circular Mare-type region, okay, shown right here. If you look at this in the topography, Serenitatis, Crisium, Nectaris are large circular depressions, pretty obvious in the topography that you see here. By the way, in all of these renditions, blue are low elevations, and the red and yellows are the higher elevations. So here are pretty obvious topographic depressions. Here's when Tranquillitatis shows up, and here is the outline of the rim of that based on Wilhelm's diameter for that. And it is clearly a positive relief feature, not a circular basin. This is part of Wilhelm's list. Don't try to read it, but these are the features that he calls distinct basins. The ones shown in white are ones which have a strong topographic basin type signature, essentially in agreement with the diameter and center in his list. The ones in red have no topographic basin structure. The ones in yellow do have a topographic signature, but it's either offset or slightly different in size. That is to say, the basin I would infer, the diameter I would infer, might be different from the one on his list. Okay. This is the other half of his list, the other part of his list. These are basins that are described by him as probable, possible, or doubtful. Many of these do not have any topographic basin signature, at least as far as I can see in the ULCN data. And those that do generally have some difference with the quoted diameter and center in his list. So 10 on his list are not obvious topographic basins at all, Australe, Tranquillitatis, and 8 others. The second bottom line result from this study is that Wilhelms lists 45 basins bigger than 300 kilometers in diameter, including all categories, at least 10 of which, as I said, do not appear to have basin topography as far as I can tell. We find, over the same size range, 92 circular topographic depressions in this size range. Let me show just a couple of examples. This is on the back side of the moon. This is the area around the well-known basin Korolev, a two-ring basin about 440 kilometers in diameter. This is Frontlys-Sharonov, a somewhat larger basin here. Again, if this is the topographic character of a basin, this is the topographic character of a basin. Somewhat subdued compared to this, but about the same size, and clearly a quasi-circular depression, if you will. There are other features over here. They're outlined here. The ones I call D are distinct in the topography. Less obvious case over here I label as a probable example. If you draw a profile through the Korolev feature and the depression to the north of it, this is the profile that you'll get. Clearly, very similar profiles. I would argue that this is the profile of a major basin, just like Korolev. Slightly shallower, slightly larger, but in every other regard, a topographic basin. One other example, this is Birkhoff, Kulam-Sartan, and Lorentz, three well-known impact basins on Wilhelm's list. A pretty good topographic basin-type structure, as is this feature down here and this feature up here, and perhaps this one down here as well, which I've outlined here as well. These other features are not on his list, even though they're in the same size range. This compares globally Wilhelm's list of basins shown in white up here with the ones we derive from the topography shown as the black circles here. Where they're solid, they basically agree with Wilhelm's characterization of those basins. Where they're dashed, they're features that I've identified in the topography, which I believe are good candidates for other large impact basins, but which were not on his list. Basically, we find more newly identified basins on the far side and at high latitudes. These are two polar regions, the North Polar region here, again, Wilhelms, and then the ones we find superimposed on that, the South Pole, down here. And again, more basins on the far side and the high latitudes than what Wilhelms had listed. This shows the distribution of diameters from Wilhelm's list and from the all the features we mapped, including the ones that do correspond to the ones on his list. I think normally you expect as you go to smaller diameters to have an exponential increase in the number of these features, which is what the topographic data seem to be indicating. It's not the case over here. This is a cumulative frequency curve, basically cumulative number larger than a given diameter per million square kilometers versus basin diameter down here. Wilhelm's list, his total list of 45 basins is shown in the red curve right here. From this study, our results are shown in blue. I don't see topographic evidence for Procolorum, so I don't show that. SPA is the largest one I see. But basically, from here, from 1,000 down to about 500 kilometers in diameter, Wilhelm's total list agrees with what I'm finding, although again, 10 of those basins I can't find, 10 of his basins I cannot find topographic structure for. But at 500 kilometers diameter, his list just basically falls off this minus 2 slope that you see here, and the topographically derived basins continue on up that. I think this is just observational loss of some kind, okay? So what does this mean? It means that there is a significant and likely large population of previously unrecognized large impact basins and likely, I would guess, smaller craters on the moon. And therefore, we have likely underestimated the total cratering and therefore the early cratering rate on the moon. What does this mean for lunar stratigraphy? Okay, it means one thing. I think it means is that regolith development and mixing of basin ejecta is likely much more complicated than we thought. At any one place on the moon, there's likely to be contributions from ejecta from many more basins than we previously would have guessed. And therefore, early lunar stratigraphy is likely much more complex than we have thought. Okay, we tie this lunar stratigraphy to the large Imbrium and Nectaris basins. Most of these newly identified basins, I believe, are pre-Nectarian in age, and I'd like to show some data for that. This is some work that was done by a high school student, Chris Bodine, who was working with Mike Peruker and I this summer. It was actually part of a study that looked at the maximum scalar magnetic anomaly value inside these new basins that we found, actually inside the whole list of 92 basins that we have, versus a crater retention age down here. This crater retention age is for features bigger than 20 kilometers in diameter per 10,000 square kilometers. That's the way Chris chose to define this. And it is relative age where this is young and this is old. The key over here shows you what we're looking at. Visible basins are shown in these two symbols down here, and they're along here, whether they're in the Maury or Highlands. What he calls the QCDs are the new features that are identified in the topography that are not part of the visible population, and they are the brown and the yellow here. And what you see is most of these, most of those are out here with a higher crater retention age than that of Nectaris, which is right here. So most of these are probably pre-Nectarian in age. In fact, I would guess, since this is based only on visible craters and many of these features are in the Maury, I'm sure the area has been overestimated. The counting area is probably too large, and many of these features, in fact, probably slide here as well. The main point is that I think most of these are pre-Nectarian in age. Okay, coming back to this point that we have underestimated the total cratering and therefore the early cratering rate in the moon, why is this important? It's because lunar cratering rate is the basis for estimating absolute ages everywhere else in the solar system. How important is this? From the NRC report, the scientific context for lunar for exploration of the moon, science concept number one, the bombardment history of the inner solar system is uniquely revealed on the moon. And maybe someday it will really be when we account for all these features we hadn't seen before. But under goals for this, okay, one is to establish a precise absolute chronology, which depends on accurate knowledge of the early lunar cratering rate. How we may have miscounted things, I'd like to show by taking a look at South Pole Aiken. Okay, here's the South Pole Aiken Basin, all right? And what I've done is to show all the visible craters that are superimposed on that basin. Over here I show what I believe are impact basins superimposed on South Pole Aiken, which do not show up on images, but which are easily detectable in the topographic data. And then this is the combined total population of these two, which may represent the total impact population superimposed in South Pole Aiken. This is down to basins bigger than about 100 kilometers in diameter, which is as far as I think you can probably push the ULCN data at this point. Over here, what we have are cumulative frequency curves for these three panels. And the visible population shown by the dark curve here, the not visible population derived from the topography shown by the brighter green here, and then the total population is shown up here. The N100 or N300 crater retention age that you would derive from these curves, okay, for the total population, okay, is a factor 1.8 greater than what you would derive if you only use the features that are visible on images, which means we would have, if these are all, in fact, impact basins that we see in the topography, it means that we would have underestimated the crater retention ages by about a factor two. This just shows the same curve, again, blown up. Here I've compared that curve with the global total from the larger basins, bigger than 300 kilometers in diameter. And interestingly enough, where they overlap here at about 300 kilometers diameter, the results for South Pole Aiken, the N300A for South Pole Aiken, is slightly higher than that for the global total, which suggests that SPA is slightly older than the global average. All right, that is thoroughly consistent with a result from Petro and Mest, 2008 at LPSC. They found a similar result for large visible craters only in South PA compared to other parts of the moon, and I think NOAA will be talking about that a little bit later. So we're seeing the same result, although it does appear that the ages are much greater than may have been estimated from the visible features alone, but at least the relative result seems to be the same. there may be more of these things than what we got from just looking at the topography. When we studied Mars, we found that Mars crustal thickness data revealed a large and significant number of new impact basins that we had not seen in the topographic data alone. These are revealed as what we call circular thin areas, or CTAs. So let's take a look at lunar crustal thickness data and see what that shows us. This is from the models of Wozorek et al. 2006, and what I've done here is to stretch the crustal thickness models in a way just like we do with the topography, and then to contour that. And the contour interval here is 4 kilometers. So what you see in here are a whole bunch of what we call circular thin areas, areas of thin crust shown by the blues, surrounded by areas of thicker crust, okay, shown by the warmer colors everywhere. This is the front side of the moon, so this is clearly Imbrium and Serenitatis and so on. Many of these are in fact associated with known large impact basins, either as determined from image data or from the topography that I was discussing before, and you can see those here. The solid lines are those from the are those visible basins, and the dashed ones are topographic features that we suggest are additional basins as well. But there's a whole bunch of these circular thin areas that are in fact that we did not identify from the topography, many of which are shown by these arrows. So there are many of these features we call circular thin areas, which I believe are possible impact basins not previously identified in the topography alone, which means the total population may be yet even bigger. These new features are shown in white here. You can see they are globally distributed. They occur in many areas where we had not previously identified basins. And if you look at the size distribution, again, as we did before, for the visible basins in Wilhelm's list, those we derive from the topography, and these new features from the crustal thickness data, this is very, very preliminary, but there may be 55 additional features. If these two really represent the total population, combined down here, you see a very strong exponential increase as you go to smaller diameters, as we would expect for an impact population of this sort. This shows the cumulative frequency curve. If you add these circular thin areas from the crustal thickness data to the quasi-circular depressions, the topographically derived basins, it pushes this up. And what it does to the N300 crater retention age is it takes it up to a value of 3.9 from 2.5 from the topographically derived features, up a factor 2 from Wilhelm's value of about 1.2 for N300 crater retention age, which means the cumulative large diameter cratering is at least 3 times what we previously thought, if in fact all of these features are impact basins. So to summarize, okay, lunar topography and crustal thickness show that there is a significant population of previously unrecognized large impact basins on the moon. We've likely underestimated at least the large diameter lunar cratering, I would guess also the smaller diameter cratering, and therefore the early lunar cratering rate, I'm guessing by at least a cumulative factor of 3. This affects all our current estimates of absolute ages elsewhere in the solar system. From the point of view of this session, however, many of these newly recognized basins are probably pre-Nectarian in age, so early pre-Nectarian lunar regolith development and early lunar stratigraphy are likely far more complex than we currently think. Thank you very much.
Great talk, food for thought. I think we have time for a couple of questions.
Thank you.
Sure. I can't prove that these things are in fact all impact bases. I don't believe all of them are. I think most of them in fact are for a couple of reasons. One is the kind of cumulative frequency curves that we get by including these things are sort of what we would expect for an impact population. And secondly, with regard to the argument about Mars, it's absolutely true. Mars has many more ways to hide things than the moon does, okay? Which I think was partly your point, okay? But even in the highlands of Mars, we find a significant increase in, we find a significant number of these features in the topography that we don't see on images. Okay? What's hiding those? That's a really fair question. My own guess is that in part is the ejecta blanket from the really, really big impact basins that's partially burying these. And that is a process that I think can be extrapolated to the moon. I'm in complete agreement with the caution about all these things because there is no way to prove these things are, in fact, impact basins. But that's my best hypothesis of what these things are likely to be at the present time. Okay? I haven't got an explanation. I agree with you, it's a circular Mario, okay? But the topography shows that it's a positive relief feature. Jack may want to comment on it. Yeah, to follow up on a point that I think Walter Kiefer made earlier in the week, at the present time, for the moon, we're in a slightly better situation than we are with Mars with the crustal thickness stuff because the gravity field actually has somewhat better resolution overall than the global topography. So I think that's why these features show up so well, these circular thin areas show up so well in the lunar case. And basically most of the basins that we do see have a really strong signature, plus there are these additional ones as well. So I think I don't know, maybe Barb wants to comment on that, but I think those may be maybe the best cases for additional new impact basins.
Okay. Okay. Thanks, Herb.
Okay, we'll move on to the next talk. Got lots of backup slides, eh, Herb? Am I going backwards? I'm going backwards.
Okay. Yeah, there's a short.
Okay. Short in there. Anyway, while they're figuring that out, I'll introduce the next speaker. And